life, real people, real talk radio. Yeah, you can tell this is not the Bob Grant Show. You know, War is Edwin Starr's song during the Vietnam War. He was a great Motown artist, incidentally, and he passed away a couple of years ago. Had the biggest cleaning bills in the world. He had more clothes than Little Richard. I used to carry his laundry for him. But it was a great song and a wonderful time in history. Now, Albert Wunsch is here. A wonderful time in history to learn to not do this again.
So and, we would hope.
Well, you know, there's a saying that says that you repeat the experience until you learn the lesson. And we apparently haven't learned our lesson. Now, I just want to say that on the air. And I don't care if you call me a Republican or a Democrat, whatever you want. I don't care. I don't care about a party. Neither one of these guys are having any fun enough to call it a party anyway. But Albert Wunsch is here tonight, who's a lawyer in New Jersey and a good friend on the show. He's in the court on Court TV, and he reads a lot, and he's a historian. So tonight, we decided to put a Vietnam special together.
Right? That's right.
And you have a couple of really important people here tonight.
And we do.
Would you like to do the honors?
I would love to. We're celebrating a book called Nam Sense, N-A-M Sense, by Arthur Witnick, who is here with us today.
From New Britain, Connecticut, right?
That's right. up near where I went to college.
Where are you from, Arthur?
Actually, it's a small town called Higginham.
Is it in Connecticut?
It's in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah, good for you. And you used to listen to me on the radio.
When I was a child, or a teenager, I used to
listen. What was I? Wait a minute. Do I look older than you?
I used to listen to you on the Buffalo station, and then when you came to Hartford, we thought it was a big deal. Hey, we got Joey Reynolds.
Well, it was a big deal. Come on, you guys came up with the money. I showed up. Now we remember that record. You remember War, don't you?
Oh yes.
And seated next to Arthur was his closest buddy at the during his service at the 101 Airborne in Vietnam, Howard Siner, who's from New York.
Hi, Howard. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Now, what was Hamburger Hill?
Hamburger Hill was a battle with 9 days in 1969. It was the Appia Mountain, and it was a assault against entrenched Vietnamese troops right along the Laos border.
Correct.
And for 9 days, the American boys were going up trying to take this hill, and they were being grinded up like hamburger.
Ooh.
But they made it. They beat the Vietnamese, as we did in most of the battles in Vietnam. And the man who was the first one up there, Art, is seated
in
his room.
Is that right?
Well, actually, I'm not the first overall. I was the first in my company. So there was around 700 of us who assaulted the hill on the final day.
But that's the first up there, Arthur.
Because I can tell you where I would have been.
Yeah.
In Thailand.
Yeah. If you saw Hamburger Hill, you would have thought it was a meal.
Well, I wouldn't have thought that kind of hamburger.
No.
That's one tough battle.
Wonderful, Arthur. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're a real hero. Terrific. Terrific to know you.
Thank you.
And I'm really glad that a hero listened to me on the radio.
That's right.
I don't know about that Dame Edna thing. When he was a kid.
Yeah.
You're 19 years old when you joined the service, right?
Well, actually, I didn't join. I was drafted.
Oh, that's not good.
when I look back on it now, it was actually one of the best experiences I ever had.
Did we win all the wars in Vietnam?
No.
We won a lot of the battles in Vietnam.
We did? Did we?
Yeah, militarily. We beat them battle-wise. We fought hard enough to die, but the politicians wouldn't let them win.
Why are we unhappy then?
We are unhappy because we weren't allowed to win.
Because we had a lot of people killed. That's the reason.
Much loss of life.
Yeah. Not good. All right. Well, let's take a break, and we'll come right back here. And Arthur Wicknick is here tonight. He's a hero and doesn't want to say that he is. No, he's shaking his head, see? Denial. Bro, he's just the first guy to go up on Hamburger Hill with a company of 700 people. and he says he's not a hero. Everybody who fought in that war really gave their hearts and souls in it, and that's a hero. But we want to just want to celebrate you a little bit, not make you out. We weren't going to have you bronzed. So you've written the autobiography, is it, of Nam Sense, or
yes.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
And this is your idea of what went on?
It's not my idea. It is what went on.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is you're writing it.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes.
That is your idea.
Well, I wanted to get a story out there that was not about tactics, not about strategies, but about the what it was like to be there, what it was like to be in a miserable situation, and just bring all the personalities forward. So the average reader or the average person who has a question about the war could read this and have a very good idea what it was like for the average combat guy out there in Vietnam.
And that's what you get, is you get the impression of what the day-to-day thing was going on. And the fact that there was a lot of tediousness, there was a lot of boredom, there was a lot of...
A lot of faking. You would fake it, so fake insanity, you get some rest and relaxation.
Well, yes, Art did that in one instance. But you had a situation where, you know, the book also talks about the bonds that are made and the friendships that are made, but the friendships that stay on the battlefield. And that don't transcend back to the States, and then, you know, which is ironic, seeing that his best friend from Vietnam is here, and Howard's on the end over there. And the thing is that you guys didn't get back together, though, to a couple of years after Vietnam was over.
Around 10 years after. When I left Vietnam, I hated it so much, I couldn't wait to leave. And one of the things I failed to do was get addresses or hometowns from different people. So it wasn't until about 10 years later that Howard here gave me a call one night, and we started talking, and he lifted a very big burden off of me, because I held all these different things that happened to me for so long, and here's a guy who experienced the same exact things that I did. He understood exactly what I went through and what the average guy went through. So Howard was a great inspiration in helping me write this book.
Howard, now talk a little bit.
Okay.
Get you on the radio here.
It's a difficult way of life to live in the infantry and to work at that job. And there's no use for it once you're out. When you come back home, you try to get back to normal, resume normal life. But it stays with you for a long time. It stays with infantry guys for their whole lives. So initially, when Art and I both got back home, we hadn't contacted anybody. And then I gave him a call and took it from there, and he began writing the book. And since then, it's been a long time in the doing, but it's finally out.
Well, you said something very interesting off the air here that Arthur said it. You know, the popular opinion, when it turns on you, you can't keep a war going.
Correct.
And this is the big job of this administration, is to keep the public stirred up in favor of it. Because once it turns around, we're not going to be there. Isn't that right?
Well, true. But one of the things that I see a little bit different about Iraq is the American public had realized that they had turned their back on the Vietnam veterans, and they're not doing that now. The men and women in Iraq have support that they've never had in the past, or that we never got. So I'm very thankful that the American public stays behind the American soldier.
Well, there's another difference. I mean, there's a couple of parallels. One is that we're changing their society, too. We're democratizing them. We're trying to make them a little bit more democratic, or to coming into our system of running political elections, I think. Is that right? Would
yes.
you say that's right, that part?
Yes.
I don't know about it. I almost said business, but I stopped myself on that. And I think in Vietnam, we were not trying to change them. We're trying to control them.
Correct.
But there were the similarities are also they're trying to, just like the Arvin were being utilized in Vietnam, and they were trying to Vietnamese.
Yeah, it's like democratize. Yeah, you and I are having war troubles tonight.
The Vietnamization of the war was trying to bring the Arvin in, which was, you know, what they're trying to do in Iraq by bringing in more of the Iraqi soldiers, bringing in the Iraqi MPs and the police forces and things along those lines. And that doesn't always work.
Have you gone back?
No, I have not.
Have you?
No, I couldn't go back.
No? It's changed, you know.
No, the memories are still too fresh.
If I could be transported in an hour or something, I'd like to go back. But it's to sit there and be thinking about it, and all these memories would come flooding back. A lot of things you do suppress. I try to remember the good times, and a lot of what I write about is the good times. And there's some of the unpleasant memories in there as well. But to go back, I don't know.
Did you say when we first went to Iraq, here we go again?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
I didn't say
that's
you
what
didn't
I said.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, I felt that.
So you have a different political belief then, don't you?
Slightly.
Yeah. I mean, you think that we need to do something so they don't come over here. Is that
part of it. The other part is now that we're there, whether we got there for the right or wrong reasons, now that we're there, I want us to finish the job and do it right.
The bad news is we're there. The good news is we're there. Is that it? So we need to finish what job? What job are we? What? I didn't know there was a hiring. I'd like to know what that is. Where's the unemployment line here?
All right. There's no line.
No, but where's the, what job? I'd like to hear that.
Well, let me ask you this. What did we do wrong with what was going on in Vietnam? I mean, should we have been there in the first place?
You're shaking your head.
I'm not trying to get into an argument because, you know what, you were there doing your duty, and I agree with that. And I don't, you know, I'm not trying to do a judgment issue. But my frustration with that war was that we were not given the opportunity. The soldiers were not given the opportunity.
Let's reposition this. Why is there a separation of beliefs? Let me ask you that.
Between the two of us?
Yes.
I don't think our beliefs are separate. The point is that the troops in Iraq and the troops in Vietnam have a lot of similarities. Both of them, in both cases, the troops are very young. They're asked to do a job that they may or may not like, but they're trying to be honorable and serve the country and do the best they can. They don't always know the answers. They're assuming that the people in Washington and the Congress, White House, know what they're doing and that they're there for the right reasons. You had no way of knowing one way or the other when you went to Vietnam if that was absolutely so or not.
So when you found out that it wasn't so, how did you feel?
I'm not saying I found that out, but...
What are you talking about? I mean, we lost a president as a result of it, and it was... that's what happened to Johnson. Yes? Am I not being historically correct?
Johnson was brought down by the Vietnam War. Certainly. But Nixon was elected for this Vietnam War because, quote, he had a plan.
Well, he did. He was friends with the Chinese, too. Who were we scaring the bejesus out of at that point? And it was our job also to scare the Russians, wasn't it? Were we trying to do that?
Well, that's an interesting point, and that was brought up,
Arthur, you're not talking. Did I say something wrong here?
No, you're doing fine. Go ahead.
But you had brought up a point, Art, that I think that you know, us going in there, you know, did slow things down. Or Howard, I think, maybe brought that up. That us going in there did send a valuable lesson out to people.
I do think that 25 or 50 years from now, maybe historians will look at Vietnam a little bit differently than people do now. It's one thing to lose a battle and win the war, or vice versa. But I think it projecting that much power 12,000 miles away for 15 or 20, nearly 20 years, did something to hold the Cold War at an even keel. I don't think the people that died in Vietnam died in vain. I think in the long run, our objectives may have well been achieved. But that's not a view that many people espouse yet. I think that may be something that will come to be seen in the future.
So why did you write a book?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I wanted people to... the Vietnam vet, for the most part, got a bad rap. We were accused of being drug addicts, baby killers, and things like that. And it simply wasn't so. I'm not so naive to say that never happened. Of course it did. But it wasn't on the grand scale that people have been led to believe. Most of the people served very honorably, very bravely, and came home and resumed very normal lives.
And some are scarred still.
Some are. And even we are scarred to some point, but we've been able to get on with our lives, have very, very successful lives, married, have children, and we just live with it.
But, you know, Joey, last week we did the 82nd Airborne, and he was scarred, you know, from World War II. I mean, combat cannot help but scar you because, you know, when you're in a situation that's life or death and you're not, you know, surrounded by friends, you're surrounded by enemies, it's going to give you an impression.
Well, you gave a lot of thought to this. I mean, you've been thinking about it for years. Do you believe that we should be going to war with these countries? I mean, I'm asking a question.
Well, when you're young and you are a little naive, you do what you're told.
I'm not talking about the loyalty and the response and the patriotism. That is all evident, and you need to do that. I mean, you're a soldier, and you're a commander in chief. I'm not talking about that. It's the politics behind that. We seem to get that mixed up. Telling people how they're going to live and telling another country how they're going to live is political. That's not military.
But see, you know,
military is defending something that you believe in.
These questions are usually beyond the average soldier.
That's right.
In other words, when you're fighting a war and you're trying to do what you're told to do and the risks are great every single day that you're there, you don't really address the politics of it that much. That's something you have to address beforehand or then after the fact when you do get home. But
Now you're home. The war is over, and you did your job, and you have been able to survive and raise families, and you're content with that, and that's wonderful. So that's the end result of your journeys with that war, that particular war.
It's not really the end result. One of the things that it's what you make of it, how you go on with your life after that. I look at it now as a learning lesson as a life experience, and I don't want to be dragged down with just thinking about Vietnam constantly or about being in the war. You have to move on. You have to go forward. This is the hand that life dealt me.
Well, every time I take my shoes off in the airport, I think of what we have going on in our lives right now, and we are not at peace. I don't know what you want to call it. You can find a lot of ways to describe all this stuff, but we're not at peace right now. And if we're in a war, why aren't we in a war? I mean, we're either in a war or we're in peace. It's war and peace. It's not war or peace. But it seems to be that we don't know how to do that. We don't. Am I really a fool to say this? Or
you know, I just want to interject because, see, the thing is this, Joey. A lot of the history books that we read are written by either the armchair generals or theorists or historians. We don't get a lot of first-person accounts.
I understand this. Arthur is talking about the common soldier and his experience of Vietnam. I understand that.
But the important thing about that is, and what Howard mentioned before, is that they didn't have a political agenda in this war. Their agenda was one thing, coming back alive.
I guess what I'm making a mistake doing is asking you about how you feel now. Because you're writing about how you were then and what happened then, and as a result of it, you got through this and you have a learning curve and you're grateful, I guess. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. But I'm saying now, what did we learn from it so that we can report that? I'm not looking for an argument on the air. I was, you know, I'm not on Fox. I just think that somewhere along the line, see, I believe that we could figure things out when we all sit down and talk. It happens in families. You can even agree to divorce. That's an agreement. And you can agree to divorce the Iraqis, you know. I mean, we can agree to not be friends with them. You know that, right? And they don't have to be making nuclear weapons and bombing us to not be our friends. But we got to figure out how we're going to do this by talking. I don't know any other way. How do you do things without communicating with each other? It frustrates me.
But unfortunately, they don't have a voice in this battle.
Everybody has
the soldiers
voice.
Don't though, Joey.
No, you're going
do
back.
You think if they had a voice in it, you would have spent 9 days going up a hill that you was not even worth the you it was abandoned after you got it. I mean, would you be doing that? No.
Well, let him answer it.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying.
Let him answer it.
Okay.
If I had a voice, I would have never been drafted. That was the last thing in the world that I wanted to happen to me. I had a new car. I had a girlfriend. I had a great job. I didn't want to go to the Army. There was a war on, and people were dying. But I was drafted. That's the way the things were in the country at the time, so I went.
Howard?
Implicit in all that is the soldier accepts the job, the assignment.
Right.
And if you disagreed to the extent that you refused it, then you wouldn't join the Army or you wouldn't accept the draft notice.
I agree with that.
So the point is, once a soldier is there, once an infantryman is there, you've already accepted the fact that you're going to put your faith in the people that are leading the country, in the Congress, in the president, that they're doing the right thing. You don't have to decide that for yourself. If you're 20, 22, 24, you don't necessarily have all the answers, and that's what the people in Iraq are facing right now. So I have great sympathy for what they're going through, But you can safely assume that they've accepted that the country is being led properly. Now, that remains for others to decide. But the people are over there fighting and dying and try to lead their lives based on that.
Vietnam Sense is the name of the book. Nonsense.
Nonsense.
Yeah. All right. I'm Joey Reynolds, and you're listening to 710 WOR. Real life, real people, real talk radio. So I got Arthur Wicknick here. He came in here wanting to meet me because he was a fan, and now he says I can't get out of here fast enough.
He didn't say that.
The author of Nonsense. I love the name. That's
yeah,
a great
that
name.
Is a great name.
Yeah, see, you got that from your childhood from listening to me on the radio.
that was nonsense.
Yeah. Oh. So having this experience with the service and raising a good family, you talk to your kids about Vietnam?
Oh yes.
What do they ask you?
I'm very big in the Veterans Affairs. I'm a member of our local parade committee for Memorial Day. So I do a lot with that. We go out and decorate the veterans' graves every year with flags, and I take my kids out with me. And when they were little, they always went with me, and they would ask questions, you know, what happened to this soldier, what happened to that soldier. So I'd explain it to them at a young age.
We did our show on Independence Day from Arlington Cemetery, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Albert was there. We all went over there and trooped into the women's division.
Yeah, the women's memorial.
Yeah, and it was wonderful. You know, I mean, I certainly have a great deal of admiration for anybody who defends any honor. I mean, I even like the Man of La Mancha, but I think there's a different kind of a. I guess maybe because I went in the direction of comparing the wars. It's the first thing because I think these are two things that I wouldn't have voted for. That's why politically. I wouldn't have voted for Vietnam, and I wouldn't have voted for Iraq. I thought there was another way to do this. And I don't know why I believe that, and there's a whole bunch of people who don't believe that. There's an ideology that comes up every time with this. It's a real sore spot. It's a sorer spot than the vets. And I think the veterans are always miserably treated anyway. I went to see a friend of mine. You know, Les Paul's son was in the hospital.
Right.
Must be listening. Maybe listening. Russell was listening. And I went over there in New Jersey, and I thought, you know, I was hard pressed to find anybody around that looked medical. They don't do for the veterans the way that we ought to. I don't believe. I mean, you know, men who have served or women, men and women who have served, they need to be treated like royalty, not as if they're disposable.
You know, Joey, what you say about that is so true. And what's interesting is even in England, the only. I think it's in the Abbey. They have all the graves of all these great people in London and everything. The only one you can't walk on is the unknown soldier. And that is separated and it is kept in such a way that no one can walk on that.
Yeah, the unsung heroes are the police and the firemen always, as we know, in everyday life here at home. And the military is very powerful, not because they have weapons, but because they have constitution, they have the great resolve. And I think the national pride is important. I don't believe that anybody can survive without that. So I'm not looking to weaken anybody or take anything away from anyone. I'm just thinking how we could do things a little differently, you know, a little bit of vision. And I keep bringing it up on the air. I mean, that doesn't make me a liberal or an anything. It just makes me a thinker.
And appreciative of what these veterans have gone
Absolutely.
Through. And that's why we need to read books like this. We need to get a sense, a nonsense of what was going on to appreciate what sacrifices. I mean, these individuals, these two men here, sacrificed a part of their childhood, a part of their youth, a part of their lives.
And Arthur is humble about it. He says it because he got drafted, you know. But after you got drafted.
You know what?
But he became a sergeant before you were a sergeant before you ever went overseas, right?
That's correct. The Army saw some leadership skills in me and wanted me to be a squad leader. So I did it to stay in the States longer. I was hoping the war would be over by the time I went over there. But it turned out I ended up as a squad leader. I was in charge of people like Howard, who was a great soldier. And
why? What makes a great soldier?
Actually, part of it is friendship, trust. There's a lot of trust.
Yeah.
It seems like, and also in the book, instinct, to me, seems to be one of those things that they can't teach you in school. Because you talk about the lifers, the guys that are there that are trying to get their careers going and things along those lines. And they have the book smarts, but they don't have the instinct. And that is the difference between a casualty and a survivor.
You must have spooked when you saw a dead person.
Actually, the very first dead person I saw was a local prostitute. She was with a group of VC soldiers who were trying to get back to the village right after dark. And anybody after dark was open game. So we opened fire on them. The only one that was killed was the girl. I was 20 years old. It was the very first dead person I ever saw, and she was somewhat mutilated by the gunfire. So it was quite shocking.
Well, Howard, you were drafted too, right?
No, I was called for the draft. I was assigned a 1A rating. I knew I would be drafted if I waited. I didn't want to wait. I wanted to go ahead. So I joined the regular Army, but I enlisted for 2 years, so I had the same status as a draftee, even though I was in the regular Army.
Oh, good for you. Well, thank you very much for being here. Both of you guys are
great
in my I think you're just heroes. I don't know what else to
call. It's a great book. Damn sense. Get it.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Albert. Be
thank
right
you,
back with the Joey Reynolds Show from New York. You want to say anything to anybody in Hartford tonight?
Hello, Hartford.
Yeah. All right, Howard's a hero. Be right back.